Ladies and gentlemen, Chikara fans, Chikarmi, thank you once again for joining.
Am I hearing anything?
Are you hearing? I think you might. Are you?
Wait.
Wait.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. PJ.
Yes.
Whitley. Pajamas. My pajamas. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
What was the question?
Ladies and gentlemen, Chikarmi, as you are hearing already, I have been joined today by, and I am going to paraphrase as I did a little research to make sure everything. For those of you that aren't aware, I am joined by one of the original hosts of the Chikara podcast, Agogo. And actually, to paraphrase one Lightning Mike Quackenbush, a gentleman without whom much of Chikara's presence and forward thinkingness on the internet would never have been possible. It was all due to this man's genius, as it were. I'm serious.
I was following you until that to the end there.
Well, at the very least, this man's persistence and intense geekery. I am talking about original podcast host Wiggly. Wiggly, how are you?
Hey, PJ. Now, I thank you for that introduction. It's all true from Mike Quackenbush's point of view, I assume. But no, I loved Chikara. I went to a lot of Chikara shows, and I wanted to expose the world to Chikara. I'd just recently gotten into podcasting myself, and in fact, a Mac magazine, Mac Life, if you know. Mac something in England.
There are so
one of my
many.
Favorite Mac. I would import this thing. It cost me like $20 when I went to the store to import this.
Yeah.
They put me on the back page. I use my Mac for, and they call me the pro wrestling podcast pioneer.
Wow.
Yeah. So how do you like them bananas? How do you like apples? That's my one. One of the wrestling
sometimes
guys.
Sometimes bananas are much better than apples.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, the podcasting pioneer here. So, you went to a lot of early Chikara shows. When did you?
Well, are we going to eat breakfast?
Oh, we are going to. What are you having for breakfast?
Fiber Plus.
Fiber Plus.
Cinnamon Oat Crunch.
Okay, well, at least there's cinnamon in there.
So, if I have to make a dash.
Hey, we don't understand
be fooled
why.
By these, yeah, it says it's got antioxidants, but just, you know, don't be fooled by these things that say they boost your immune system, because you don't want your immune system boosted. That's called lupus. It's called multiple sclerosis. It's called autoimmune hepatitis, fibromyalgia.
Your body just attacks yourself? Is that your body just attacks yourself?
Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
Definitely not.
It's a very complex network of your immune system is very complex, of course.
Of course.
Because you have eyes, some hands in there, a couple
sure.
tickets.
Some
tickets
noses.
To shows. Yeah. You don't want that.
See, I generally follow the advice of George Carlin, who just said to eat a little bit of broccoli.
That?
Broccoli
that,
kills
that
everything.
It tastes great.
It does.
As long as you smother it in cheese, and then you have the high cholesterol.
Absolutely. See, I usually went I'm a little more of a purist. I went with more just a little bit of butter and lemon.
Now, do you like it cooked or raw?
Raw with hummus, and then steamed with butter and lemon.
Very good. Very good.
Yes.
Very good. You are a connoisseur. You are, as my grandma, as my nana would call me. I told her I was a vegetarian. She said, my grandson is a gourmet. Well, he's a gourmet.
She was trying. She tried.
And my poppy, when I told him that I didn't eat meat anymore, he said, ah, it's pastrami. What do you mean? It's just pastrami.
Pastrami is one of the better meats. I'm inclined to agree with your poppy.
Well, it is good.
Right.
You have those like peppercorn things in there or whatever they are.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yummy. Ah, crunch. Did I just break a tooth off or am I eating a pastrami sandwich? That's why I like to eat corn nuts. I don't know if I'm chewing my own teeth off or if I'm eating delicious corn snacks.
What are corn nuts? I've never had them because I'm confused by the hybridness of them all.
They're a salty ball.
Okay.
That is, it's a corn. It's just a piece of corn that somehow they made to turn into a ball shape. and then they're salted, or you have these other type of powder. I'm not a fan of powder mixes on my snack foods, my hand to mouths. I'm not a big fan of powder. I don't like the powder on them, you know?
There's nothing better than the cheesy powder after eating, like, a whole bunch of Cheetos.
Awful.
What? Well, getting that off your fingers is the best part.
Can you get that off your fingers? That's the thing.
It takes a little bit of work, but, you know, it's like hunting for food at that point. It tastes better as a result.
I'll give you that, but I don't like the Doritos with the things on them. You know, the cool ranch and the nachos and the things. I don't know what it is, paint. But these corn nuts, they're very hard. They're very hard and very loud. You can't hear things when you become an older person that needs to wear the magnet ear thing. I can spy on my neighbors.
I personally plan just to, as I get older, to be a little retro with it and just get the giant ear horn and not actually get one of the small in-ear devices.
That's what you need.
Exactly.
You need.
Exactly. Gotta turn it all around.
Very good. Now, what about the... Now, I heard you talking to Icarus. I don't know how I'm going to follow that guy. I mean, that guy, I'll tell you what, that guy's so mean that he gave his wife oysters and a rabbit's foot because she asked for pearls for her birthday. That's how I killed in the borscht belt. He has three cell phones. I see the guy has three cell phones just so he can hang up on more people. That's how. He sends get well cards to hypochondriacs. That's how.
I appreciate that you're going with new material and not the standard horrendous tattoo material.
He'd steal a dead fly from a blind spider. That's how he's so mean, this guy.
And you've seen him since day one.
Haha, 96.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I thought I saw him as Ichabod Slain, but the first time I saw him was when he was in Fist. I only saw it on the video footage back with the CM Punk and the, what do they call themselves? Something.
Oh, the Gold Bond Mafia?
That's it, Gold Bond Mafia. And then they were going against the black t-shirt group, gang. And but the first time I saw him, he was in Fist. I hated Fist immediately, even though they were technicos. I would sit by myself in the church when I would go to see them. Mm-hmm. And I know that the senior hit parade, the senior hit squad was part of that as well, with two of my favorite wrestlers.
All right.
In that thing there. I don't know. What am I going to talk about? My set list that I play at the shows? I mean, I don't know.
You're an unknown entity in many ways to the longtime fans of Chikara. I mean, obviously they knew you as a host of the podcast
and hated me. I've had my haters, you know, my haters.
I'm sure we all do.
Well, you know, the problem here is that when you're anonymous by that. And I work blue, by the way, so I don't know if you have the bleep button ready.
We will.
Yeah, no, I won't work blue. But I was drinking tea, and I know that you were drinking tea with Icarus. Just to completely jump around, like, this is how my shows go.
That's fine.
On Wiggly World. But my favorite tea comes from Nepal, and it's weird. It's a very, very unusual tea. It's
tea.
It's pronounced tea. Yeah.
Okay.
It's weird. Tea. That's my favorite tea.
Does it have a particular kind of infused flavor, or is it sort of a standard tea?
Everyone is different.
Okay.
Everyone is different.
Interesting.
So when you go out, ask your ma kids to pick you up some tit tea. So that's good. But I saw, so I would see these kids, and they would ride, I don't know, there was an eyeball fighting, and there was people riding tricycles around with a voiceover going on. I was like, this is the most amazing thing that no one's ever seen.
Sure.
And then they moved to other fire halls and things like this, followed them around. And then when electricity occurred, I jumped on as a podcaster with a Smart Wrestling Fan was the name of that show.
Okay.
And about maybe, I don't know, 6 months in, a year in, I thought, hey, wouldn't it be nice, it was audio only, wouldn't it be nice to do a video podcast? And I know I immediately, as soon as I saw Running in the Red, I saw Claudio Castagnoli against Mike Quackenbush at the UFC theater. What's it called? The ECW, the arena, the scary arena,
yes.
The shutdown arena, whatever it's called.
Yes, the multi-named arena.
Shows there. Yeah, mothball arena. As soon as I saw that show, I was like, oh my gosh, everyone has got to see this. So I wanted to do a show there. Mm-hmm. I mean, a video podcast featuring Chikara. And so I thought, oh, this would be great. I'll dress up in a suit like Vince McMahon did. I'll put my hand behind the co-host in front of him because I remember stuff from the 70s because mm-hmm. I'm, you know, 100. And I punched Lou Albano in the stomach, you know, back in the days. So this was all type of stuff that I thought, oh, this would be great. And then what I didn't realize when I finally made this happen, I was going to interview some of the talent of Chikara. What I didn't realize is that I was into music since I was a musician since 78. I don't know if I was farting in the bathtub or what. It doesn't matter. But I was making music. I had a band at least since 81
right.
That played music, and we would do shows. I don't know. Maybe sometimes it was only two songs, and it was in different friends' basements. Mm-hmm. And we'd, of course, smoke everybody out with our homemade flash pots, and then we were just very loud. I was always in front of the mic where people would ask me questions. Mm-hmm. So when I was in back of the mic and I realized I didn't have any questions for anybody, I didn't know what to do. You know, I knew how to stand there and say, you know, here, we're at the, you know, American Legion Hall. But mm-hmm. then when it got past that, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. it was still a fun thing. And I showed the entire clip and, not too long after that, that Mike contacted me and wanted to do the Chikara podcast, A Go-Go.
Okay.
And I did that for five or six years, something like that, 250 episodes. And then I only do 200 of anything, but this, because it was so special, I did a 50 extra, so.
Chikara is lucky for it.
I'm glad that I had some part in you know, starting the ball rolling. Now mm-hmm. Mike does, you know, 150 podcasts like I used to do. So sure. it's good. He's really rolled that up and very successful at that. Very happy. And of course, the PJ Drummond show.
That was offered to me completely out of the blue and stunned me. So, but I was very glad to take on the task.
Much like the first Chikara podcast of Go-Go. I didn't know I was going to be on Mike. I wouldn't have worn, you know, what I wore. It didn't dawn on me that, well, you know, you want to, with these Go-Go's, if you go back in the archives, I didn't realize that, well, I don't want to, like, ham it up, because the talent of Chikara is what you're trying to pitch mm-hmm. and show off, rather, not pitch. I don't think we really ever did that. But we, you know, you want to show off the talent, so... I always wanted to be on camera and do different things, but I wanted to do a variety shows. Back in 89 or 90, I had my first TV show. We won it with Trapdoor, the group that I am a member of, and now pretty much me and Trapdoor Charmed are the only members of it this time. It sort of rotates like the Avengers.
Right.
I get different flavors to play the different instruments, and it all adds to... different sounds and
music occurs.
Music happens at some point, and it all adds, you know, different elements to my ideas and my visions. Mm-hmm. So what about that? I don't remember.
Well, I mean, you've been a multifaceted person in general for Chikara as well. I mean, you did write and perform the theme song.
Oh yeah, I do those until I got recently ousted by someone who could crank them out a lot quicker.
That's sad, and I feel bad for bringing it up.
Mike, I'm sure Mike would want me to do everything. He just feels like he's impinging on my life.
Okay.
You know, I did the most recent ones was I did the Demons song, which was for the Battery.
Okay.
And Fist.
Okay.
Because right. I love those guys from Fist.
How could you not? Gentlemen and scholars, all of them.
Now, isn't that funny how my most hate it, and then I end up doing a theme song for them?
Well, everyone, you need that yin and yang balance in the world.
the bad. But that is one, that is a song I really enjoyed making. Okay. Because I actually got to be quite creative on it. The thing with the podcast is one of the reasons that I had to stop doing it. Well, number one, I got into doing it because I knew how to do a camera and do a editing software, mm-hmm. Final Cut. Now, okay. I don't like to edit. I'm not an editor. I don't like to do those type of things. I like to make it like this TV show that I mentioned. I like to do that. I like to cut my original things together and have fun with that. And that was back when, it was all analog equipment. It was during that time, people were just switching over to Macs in the schools, and my buddies and I would ninja into schools or ninja into the book company in Allentown, some press company in Allentown. Mm-hmm. I snuck into there under various different excuses for why I was in there, and we'd edit these shows together and these little things together, these little videos. Mm-hmm. So. I like to do my own things, but I'm very bad at... I don't want to sit behind a computer and try to crank out shows, especially on a weekly basis, to the caliber that they ended up becoming. I think they ended up becoming pretty good.
They're very impressive, yes.
Good qualities. The first ones, of course, just tinkering around. Mm-hmm. And then as they went on through the years, especially through the singing theme years... Mm-hmm. I think those were maybe. That's when I realized, we really have to show Chikara. It's hard to get across any creative thing. Mm-hmm. I've yet to really see a video of Trapdoor that captures what our live shows are like, the performances and things like this. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to put that across on video.
Okay.
The intro videos, you could see a dynamic shift. Well, the second year was created by some college students that wanted to create a video for it, mm-hmm. and just laid the music underneath. But the fourth intro, fourth year, we call it, I guess, our theme 2008.
Okay.
So that year, and then 2009 and 2010, those were the years I really focused on those intros, really trying to show what Chikara is all about. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy thing to do. And then, but what happened was, not only was it incredibly time consuming, I wasn't able to work on music, but I wasn't, because of the caliber, I think, at least for me, the difficulty and the time it would take. I wasn't able to grow with it. All the previous years, I was able to grow with what I was doing, with the transitions, what I was doing to keep things looking consistent, mm-hmm. type of little zings and things and blings and blongs and buffers and different types of things I can add to make it a more interesting program. I didn't have time to do that.
Okay.
My growth stopped. With that, and that's another reason I had to call it Kaputskis, but I wanted it to keep going, and I gave a lot of hints to make it completely different than where it was going when I was holding the reins of it. And a lot of people didn't know that, I pretty much did soup to nuts. Anything that wasn't filmed by Smart Mark, that was pretty much me. I didn't decide on what I strictly said. I need to know exactly what second these clips you want featured to be in here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to pick clips myself. That would have just been that. I mean, that's a whole job in itself.
Sure.
But that would be. Mm-hmm. So I said, you really need to just make this completely. Unlike what I've been on now, I think it's there. I think it's completely its own show. It's quite different. They show entire clips. They got rid of the green screen because that's a. If I couldn't afford a real green screen, number one, Mr. Peabody, I couldn't afford a real green screen. That's actually like a green tablecloth I stapled to a giant wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had, Mr. Peabody!
Problems?
No, everything's good.
Okay, good.
You like to be on mic.
Gotcha.
Like, when I open a mic, do not meow.
Cats always want to be the center of attention.
They do.
Yeah.
And it's getting back to the Go-Go, it's very good now that I'm actually still part of it. Well, I was able to do the new theme song, which unfortunately Mike wanted Santo theme song.
Okay.
El Santo. But I watched all the El Santo movies I had. Mm-hmm. Even when he's fighting the Blue Demon, he's fighting the Blue Demon in a car, in a convertible. Cliffs that are like 600 foot down. Mm-hmm. Fighting each other, they're punching each other, headed for a tunnel, headed off the edge of a thing. No one's steering the car. Still this beatnik jazz going. That's the most rowdy music. Jazz during these Santa movies. So this had happened before too with that student cut, college cut. I mentioned that looks Tronish. So Mike went to Tron music. Well, I listen to Tron, and it's Journey. So he doesn't really want Journey, and he doesn't really want Santo. He wants something that looks like Tron looks like, and something that sounds like Tron looks like, and something that sounds like Santo movies look like. So I had never played any type of... I think he went like... a band that does that, because I can't go on the internet and go bang, ding, 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 down. So I thought, well, I never played a progression like that, and finally it hit. The progression was really good, but I had to cut it down to like 21 seconds or something, and so the whole story of the song is lost, and it's just this surf type of music that is unremarkable.
Ah.
If you purchase the whole song on the iTunes, then you will get hit. And it's unfortunate that I named the Chikara song 2011, because I like did it in December, and now it's 2012, and who wants something that old, you know?
Sure. We need to get rid of everything old.
Do. You delete your entire iTunes library the next year.
Yes, exactly. Although, in my investigative discussions into who you were and everything like that, I have been led to believe that you are quite the curator of classic items and TV shows. Am I wrong on this?
I'm not going to be naming programs or movies like Icarus. I can't quote from things like that as he can.
Sure.
I mean, I just got done. I like older things, but funniness would have it, as that's what they call it. Funniness would have it. I just blew through about 1.5 seasons of Modern Family.
Okay.
And I've yet to hit on one note that has anything to do with my personal family life ever yet. Something in this program will make me cry at least one. Now, when the stinker shows happen, they're terrible. Mm-hmm. But good shows, but almost every non-stinker show has made me cry and laugh and bang the table in hilariousness, even though I can't relate to it whatsoever. I think it has something to it that appeals to me, even though I usually like the... I mean, I like all the older shows, like The Honeymooners, mm-hmm. Columbo, The Odd Couple, Birds of Prey, all the old classics.
Sure. Do you have a particular one, like, or a genre that you preferred, or just kind of a collector of all?
Well, I don't necessarily collect them. I have them. Like, I have them in some form.
Okay.
Antenna. Like, I even have the second Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Misfit Island of Toys or something of that nature.
Classic.
It's a classic, terrible show. Mm-hmm. It's a program that is horrible. I have, I don't know what type of Captain America it is, but is from a foreign land where American Spider-Men are the villains. Amazing. Interesting. But I also have a lot of old things. Yes, old dusty things.
Yeah, your house was mentioned as a veritable museum.
Well, as non-funniness would have it,
okay.
I'm getting rid of all my toys from 1978 up. So right now I am cleaning them off, dusting them off, giving them a bath and Skin So Soft and types of trick formulas mm-hmm. that make it look shiny on eBay. And I'm getting rid of everything 78 up and purchasing things that were thrown away by my pop. Like 66 to 70, well, 70, 78 is my cutoff, really. So
okay. Any particular reason or?
My grandfather ran a bar in the coal regions called Sloppy Joe's.
Okay.
And it was an actual bar that people go to, and I grew up there, spent the summers up in the Shmokin, Colt Mount area, the places where a lot of people might know Canoe. If they're from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. go there on a. It's like the greatest amusement park that you could go to because you step back in time and it's really neat. It's really cool. But up in that region, the coal regions of Pennsylvania, and you could it only had one main street and you could drive through it in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of many people don't know I married Trapdoor Charm. She was also hosted many of the Go-Go, some of my favorites with Bryce, mm-hmm. some good ones, and with Sarah Del Rey, some really good ones. And one, they got the elevator, they didn't know how to work that. That was speaking of things that were 100 years old, that was 100 years old. But my grandpa owned this 100-year-old bar up there, and the back bar, front bar, the real bar. Mm-hmm. When we finally were able to buy a house, we lived in a chicken coop. I lived in a chicken coop for like 20 years. And it was an actual chicken coop where you had to go outside to another house connected to the property to use the toilet and the sink and take a shower. There's no running water in it. And I lived there far longer than I ever thought. And this is what happens when you're a delusional musician, artist, that you do crayons.
Got to live that classic starving artist life.
It's and you know, especially when you're starting and you're 46 years old. one dumb person once told me that you're never a quitter until you refuse to get up again, and unfortunately, I believe that. So we have a house now, and it's a great house. And when we were house searching, in fact, it's like a mansion. It's a mansion in Easton, Pennsylvania, and unbelievable that we live here. It's Victorian, but when we were searching for homes, we made sure. Let me get a couple more of these. When we were searching for this house, we made sure that the bar could fit because I own half the bar, 9 foot of it instead of 18 foot that it was.
Wow!
And I own a back bar and a big mirror and everything and that mm-hmm. and everything. And I always thought, okay, when we find a house and it can fit in there, I'm going to make like this speakeasy. It's going to have drapes. There's not going to be any, you're not going to be able to see walls or ceilings. It's just going to be drapes and really low lighting and all this other business. And when we brought the bar in, well, before we even brought the bar over, I was looking at photos of my grandpaps and I said, you know what? I don't want to do this. I want to recreate Sloppy Joe's like it was in the coal region. So I painted, I never done anything like this. I stripped the floors of this thick white paint. I lacquered the floor, you know, sanded and lacquered the floors. I've never done anything like this. Stained and lacquered them. I put wainscoting on the walls. I painted the walls. I painted the ceiling. I did all this business that I've never done before. And I put the bar in there and between the 1975 when it closed and the 2011 when I brought it over here, my stepdad had upholstered it like the 70s, you know. Oh. had like this pleather upholstery on it with this with these grommets and thousands of upholstery tacks because he was a reupholsterer. Mm-hmm. I pulled all of those tacks out and every single grommet. The grommets were made like wine bottles and our names and all. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them, when I tried to pull them out with the pliers, the head would pop off, and then I would have to try. two-inch grommet needles. And then I sanded that, and I blasted the crap out of that, and wood putty, and then I did, like, my Chizzy bought me this Martha Stewart paint kit. So I did, like, four passes of sponge technique, sponge on, sponge off, sponge on, sponge off. And anyway, it looks just like Sloppy Joe's did in the coal regions. Mm-hmm. So from there, somehow, I got the idea that, wait a minute, I remember having these plastic Marvel superheroes, and all they were statues, and they were one color made out of plastic. So I'm trying to look up plastic Marvel superheroes. Well, you can imagine the Google results for that, because, you know, that is of Marvel that has come out as a tchotchke, right, as a doll, whatever, has been made out of plastic. But they were, there are these, this company called Marks, who made just about every plastic toy you could think of in the 70s and 80s and 90s, probably, like little army men, little everythings. They made these plastic superheroes between, I guess, 76, 78, somewhere around there till the later ones in the 80s. And so I found out about those. Now, my granny got me these. For, you know, she got me anything out of the dollar bin, 75 cents, $1.50. So I could have all of them, and I think there were five. Iron Man, Hulk, Spider-Man, Thor, Captain America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so she probably spent $3 on that. And now they're $50 a piece, of course.
Nice.
Yeah, so that happened. And then I tried to collect my Bionic Man collection, that make that complete with Maskatron and all his arms and all his everythings and all his masks and Bionic Bigfoot I had for a long time. Here it is, Bionic Bigfoot now is like $300 loose. It's crazy. It's insane. And I tried to find other little pieces like these. I remember that my grandpa's bar had these fire extinguishers that are called auto fire stops. Mm-hmm. I also found out that these are popular in Victorian homes. Well, I haven't seen them since. Well, actually, there's a story there. I don't know. How are we doing on time?
We're fine. We're good.
So what this is, it's this glass bulb, and it has runs tapers down to this nipple at the end, and it sits in this this metal, like, round thing, and it usually has this fire emblem on it. It's like a cross, and it's on silver... silver sticker with black paint, sometimes a little embossed. And it also has this wrap around it, auto fire stop. You can look these up, auto fire stop. You have to spell fire, F-Y-R.
Ah, fancy.
You know?
Yeah. It's
using the Y. And
it's like adding an E on the end of old.
80s, you know, 1880s. They're doing the funky fresh things, all those funky fresh things the kids say.
Exactly.
And so what happens with this is there's this coil with a hammer on it. So you hang this somewhere, and there's all different types. There's also another company that was called Red Sure Stop, Red Demon. I don't know what the hell it's called. Mm-hmm. But there's this little hammer on these auto fire stops. And when it got really, really hot, like the place was an inferno, this thing would melt, and this hammer would knock the nipple end off the bottle, and the water or the chemical content in the early days, the chemical content was supposed to dribble out of this this ball and put out the flames. Okay. Or there's a second way, and they give you all these methods on the holder, on the wrapper on this. The second method that you could do is you could break the nipple off yourself and then shake the chemicals onto the fire. And then the third way is the classic water bomb, and that is you take the whole thing, mm-hmm, whole kit, and then you throw it at the fire, and then it's supposed to put out the fire. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find these things as well, because I had one from the original Sloppy Joe's, and I had one down in the toilet. because I guess, you know, guys would go down there drunk and they'd be smoking. Now, there's only a sit-down toilet in the basement of Sloppy Joe's. Mm-hmm. They had installed this water trough at the underneath the foot rail so that people can throw their cigarettes down there and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. there was running through there right at the bar. And then guys, being the classy characters that they were, would just, if they had to go pee-pee, mm-hmm. They would just take their tinkles right in that water trough. bar. But in the basement where they had a sit-down toilet, they had one of these auto fire stops. And I guess it's because, you know, of course you could smoke. Mm-hmm. So would throw, you know, toilet paper and paper towels and whatever into the garbage can, and they throw their butts in there and catch on fire. Mm-hmm. But I had that chemical thing, and mine had the chemicals in it. There, they changed the chemicals after the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And one day at the chicken coop, I had fallen into a deep sleep. And I had this thing at home, and I had it wrapped in this bucket, and, you know, it was like wrapped in T-shirts, and it was in this yellow bucket, and it was all safe and sound. But I'd fallen into a deep sleep, and, I mean, I was zonked for the whole day. Mm-hmm. When I finally had woken up, thankfully, I had gerbils, and all my gerbils were dead. And I was like, what the hell? All my gerbils at the same time. Mm-hmm. Here, somehow, this auto fire stop had fallen and broken in my house. And that chemical had released and killed.
Wow.
And knocked me out. So, so there's that.
I think I'm sorry. It's just amazing going from this story of, you know, you recreating your grandfather's bars into this gerbil holocaust.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was Vietnam.
All right.
But I've gotten a lot of things, a lot of other things is these Mego Pocket Heroes and these Mego, let's see, they first came out as Mego Action Superheroes. Mm-hmm. They had bent legs, and those are the ones I had. Those were both DC and Marvel, just like some of the 8-inch Migos. These are little 3-inch, something around there, 3.5. And they made like Shazam, Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Robin, Spider-Man, Hulk, mm-hmm. and Green Goblin, Penguin, Joker. And I think that's it. And then when they later came out, they came out with straight legs. And they were just sort of part of the same top bodies, except they came out with... Oh, Aquaman. Aquaman was another one. And then they came out with straight legs later in the early 80s, 81, and they were called Mego Pocket Superheroes. So these things are going for a fortune now, too. Back then, you know, $1, $1.50. But there was one guy, and the very funny thing about these is if when you get a lot of them, especially the bent leg ones... Mm-hmm. All have the same hands. One hand, the right hand, their left hand is open, sort of like maybe you go to shake hands with someone that had a giant hand, like with Tursus. Yes, your hand is like that. The other hand was shaped into almost a fist, but it had a hole in it, and that's so like Wonder Woman could have her lasso, but. Mm-hmm. Like a lasso that was stiff plastic that had a peg on it. So, a peg on my magic lasso. And different people, like the Joker had a cane, different things like that. But it had a hole in it. So, when they're all bent-kneed, standing there with a hole in their one fist pointing down towards their waist and their other hand in the same position... Mm-hmm. They all look like they're doing something very foul. With this fist with a hole in it near their waist area.
Sure.
So it's just very comical to see these superheroes lined up. And you really can't pose them in any other way. They look dumb. Mm-hmm. So they're all there in line like that. But this guy that was almost impossible to find, Rubber Bendy Martian. So if you look up Rubber Bendy Martian, It took me about 2 years to figure out that this guy was Callisto.
Ah, okay.
And I had Callisto. He had this gun that would shoot a string out by, you would press, and this is, I mean, nobody that listens to this show will remember this because they weren't born for another 20 years. But you would squeeze this billows.
Okay.
It's a billows thing. And the little string would come out, and that was his laser gun. And, of course, he was from Venus, which I didn't know. I thought he was a Martian. But he was actually part of a franchise, which right now I will not be able to recall. Oh, my gosh. He was an astronaut. And I'll think, you know, when I got off the phone. But it was part of this big franchise of this astronaut franchise. And it's kind of a neat story because he was like a reluctant astronaut. Mm-hmm. So you really didn't have reluctant heroes in the 60s. I mean, that was from mythology. You had a lot of reluctant heroes. All the classic heroes didn't want to take on the big burdens of what they would be tasked with. Mm-hmm. But in the 60s, it was kind of odd that somebody didn't want to be a Major Matt Mason, that somebody didn't want to be a hero, an astronaut. But that's how this was. And so that was almost impossible to find. But so I'm going through things like that. Pulsar, Duke, the dog, the action dog, trying to find these pretty, I mean, everybody, you know, goes for these 8-inch Migos things. And those are, but those aren't what I owned because those were a little more expensive. They were like $5. So I didn't get those. So, you know, I'm trying to get the things that made, that I played with in Sloppy Joe's, and then I have a little shelf for them, and weeding out the things that came later.
Okay. All right. There's a theme I've been, you know, as you've been telling the story and everything like that, of, you know, recreating the bar and even just where you, you know, the early adoption of the podcasting and then jumping in with the video podcasting and things like that. I mean, I don't think it'd be a stretch to say that you are a believer of the sort of, you know, the DIY ethos. You know, if you're gonna do something, you may do it. You might as well do it yourself. What was it? Do you think it was just you found sort of a kinship in that with Mike and the rest of the people that run Chikara, and that's why it's been so successful for you guys? I mean.
Well, that's interesting. I never thought of that. Definitely, Mike is a do it yourself type of fella. Mm-hmm. But he, this is something I think a lot of people don't realize. I'm very few people, especially Chikara related, know everything I'm involved with or have done or capable of, and mm-hmm. I don't think I put out everything I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. It's because you can tell when I would get I don't get hate anymore. If I do, I don't know where it exists.
Sure.
And, you know, usually that stuff you consider a source, and like I said, the anonymity. But everything that I've done, I haven't had traditional training on. Mm-hmm. But I have paid the price of the traditional training. I have practiced. Mike didn't just start Chikara. He paid the dues, and anyone that is a wrestler in Chikara, they paid their dues as well. Mm-hmm. Like many independents may have, or even in the pro, you pay your dues.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you do things, set up rings for 2 years, and I did that as well. But he learned his craft. He practiced his craft. He went from he went to different feds and different, I don't know what you call independents. He went to different mm-hmm. independents and saw what they did and learned. And then he took classes from the luchadors, from the Japanese wrestlers, which I can't recall that style, from the Lancashire.
Pro-res.
Yes. Yeah, but not even that. Them there then.
That thing that those guys did that time.
And all those fellas.
Yeah.
He paid those dues. He didn't just jump in a ring and or start a company or do things like that. And I'm sure there's people that do that. Yeah. Most of them probably promoters, but he did do everything himself. He does do more work than people know. And with me, I do crayon work. You know, I do crayons. I do music. I built my own video pinball machine. It's a pinball machine right at it, but you know, it emulates pinballs. It has a flat screen television in the bottom, and then it has a little DMD section for your dot matrix display, and then it has a big back glass area, and then you put things in here from if you go to vpforums.org, you can find out all about creating your own emulating pinball. But I mean, it has a plunger, and it has flippers, and it buttons, and it has a coin door, and it has all that business. Mm-hmm. So, but that really doesn't have anything to do with artwork.
Okay.
I've been an administrator since 86, and I've never had traditional training in anything, but that didn't mean that I didn't put in the work to get there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people ask me about art, and right now, if I had to do some drawings for somebody or do some artwork for somebody, well, number one, I wouldn't, because I'm not that type of artist. I like to do things for myself, although I have done things for other people. Mm-hmm. They're showing me their artwork. The most important thing is to go back to the pencil sketch every now and then. If I had to do some real artwork, now some serious art, I'd go back and take a month or two to start back with pencils and sketching and looking at things and sketching what I see. Mm-hmm. Because I lose that over time. When I'm focusing on music, I lose that. Mm-hmm. When I do a song, I have to practice, you know, my bass again. I have to practice guitar, which I don't know how to play guitar. So I practice to mm-hmm. try to figure out how to fake guitar, just have fake keyboards and do all that thing. But people often say things come natural to people, and I don't know anybody that something came natural to them. They practiced the Dickens out of it. Maybe they're very good at it. Mm-hmm. But nothing came easy to me. Everything that I do, I had to practice and learn from hard knocks. Nowadays, you have to go to college. You have to go to higher learning pretty much to get a job. But I was fortunate enough that I got into technology when I did. And now I can be an IT administrator and, you know, do everything from networking down to desktop to Unix boxes, heterogeneous laying out of heterogeneous whole server rooms, you know, backups and Exchange servers and mail, Mac file servers and Mac. It sounds really good. You know, Mac servers and everything else, and integrate with Active Directory and do things that a lot of people that went to school don't even know of. But, you know, all that came with experience and with a lot of learning, self-learning, self-teaching and reading books. So, mm-hmm.
But I would assume a lot of passion at the same time.
Well, you need something to drive you. For me, to what drove me in, well, number one, when I got out of high school, I was asked to teach at Votech Art. But they required me to take courses at a community college in artwork simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do that at the time. I would have loved to have been a teacher of art. I think that would have been pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Because I did start a lot of things in my Votech in my high school years. We built a dark room because I wanted to do that. We did our own, you know, screen printing. Mm-hmm. That going. So my teacher really dug that. And he was a young kid doing it too. But I didn't want to go to college. I was done with school. When I was in high school, I said, boy, I'm done with school. You know, this was years, and I'm sure if you add that up, it's more than 200 days. So I'm completely done with it. I only do 200 of anything. I only do 12 of anything that has to do with school.
Sure.
So that didn't happen, and then I had to get jobs that I didn't care. The only motivating factor in the other jobs, the only motivating factor in technology was money. And that's a good motivating factor, mm-hmm. because allow me to do artwork or music or whatever the hell I want it in for myself and not have to, be a part of anybody else's plans. But that's what made Chikara so special. Mm-hmm. I did want to collaborate with this. And I was given creative freedom. I mean, there was very little that I ever did that Mike said no. Mm-hmm. I can only remember one time, and I can't discuss it.
Sure.
Everything I was able to continue to grow with it, and was something I enjoyed. And even though it wasn't my vision, as I grew more mature, and as I, which didn't have anything to do with maturity, but as I got older, I got a lot looser with my control issues of things that I did. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, like I said, I think that that's what made the synergy there. It made me tolerate, it is true. It made me want to be a part of that, and I think I got back just as much because Mike wanted to be a part of what I had to act. Now, mm-hmm. That said, the Go-Go's could have been, if it was just me and Bryce, the Go-Go's would have been more like a variety show. And I think also, Ultramantis Black, mm-hmm. Gavin Loudspeaker. I think we all wanted to take it in more creative directions, but with little skits in between. But there just wasn't enough time. We all lead our own lives separately from the Go-Go. And but sometimes, you know, you could see little bits of things that would happen in there, like the mailbag. Mm-hmm. That's just, it pops in mind, and I can't tell you when that happened. Or, my Wiggly West. I mean, these were just improv things, but we tried to make them a little more interesting. We never came there with, ready-made gimmicks, except the one time that I wanted to say I got the new iPad and was actually, the original Apple Newton e-mate. I bought it a before street date, and I had the dancing baby on there, you know. But I told him I paid several $1,000 and, you know, things like that. So we tried to do some fun thing, and some of the ones that really hit those notes are the ones we did on location. And unfortunately, we would every year we would do Chikara Goes Around the World. Mm-hmm. And what those episodes were for were to give me time to write a new theme song, because when we went around the world, I didn't have to do anything special, any special editing to it, because we'd shoot outside, and I had the ready-made intro to that. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have to do a lot of fancy stuff to make things look good and extra filters and extra rendering time. And especially when the green screen stuff happened, I didn't have to try to make any backgrounds for that or any other things. And this would allow me, I could edit those quick. So this would allow me to write the new theme song. Mm-hmm. So I liked those. But then we took it to a level where I wanted to have seen it go and try to integrate more of the talent with the programs, and that was the last the second to the last four shows that we did, where we actually, you know, filmed in front of the Chikara screen when we came through, Gavin and I, and then we did one where was a season end and we were taking off our gear, and we did one out by like swing sets and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did one where we were driving, and those were very fun and very interesting for me to edit. And I always thought if the Go-Go could be taken to the next level, then feature more of the talent. I think that's what they do now. And also another neat thing about the Go-Go's now is that they're in front of my banner, which that's the artwork I created. So okay. That makes it I still see myself in there a little bit, you know.
Sure, sure.
And that's where most of the interviews are done and everything else. So that's always nice to see that. And that was one That was always one of the funniest things, that all the people that hated me, and they were on these news groups and tickety typing, he takes off his shirt and he's not funny. Just because you the borscht belt jokes, I can't help that. But they're tickety typing, and here their emoticon is my artwork, and they don't even realize that. They don't realize how much in how much of Jakara that they were exposed to. Fortunately, I was involved with, you know.
Sure.
And I made some DVD covers. The first two I made for them, I almost quit doing anything with them. And this, the Go-Go's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mike had found out that I doodle, and I guess they used to listen to my CD as well. They were particularly fond of Boom Tube, the song Boom Tube by Trapdoor, when they would drive to different locations out of town. Mm-hmm. And so I did Anniversario Epsilon, and I think Delta, or something of that nature, Epsilon and Delta. And mm-hmm. I was used to working with professional print shops. So when I made these drawings, I, of course, included Bleed Room. Oh, there's my gynecologist. It's included. Oh, it's negative. Okay, good.
Okay.
I included Bleed Room. And if you don't know what that is, it's like several inches of space around your artwork that you just fake out in case it gets cut off by the die cutter. Because I didn't know what type of you know, thing was going on behind the scenes of the Jakara DVDs.
Sure.
I'd seen the artwork on the DVDs, and I won't mention anything about it. But now the quality's, you know, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the Jakara DVD covers back then, but for different reasons. But so I left this Bleed Room, and I he said, "You deal with this person because he's the person that is our print guy. That sends it to the printer. That's the middleman and does, knows everything, etc."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "You know, here it is. It's got the Bleed Room. I have the marks. I can't even think of what your marks are called, but I have the marks there." And well, he printed it with the extra stuff that was in the Bleed Room. So, like, Mike Quackenbush's leg looks like Coil Man from The Impossibles, because I was just taking out things over there. He's stretching plastic, and it's all squished and destroyed. And I was like, I will never... And this was back at a time when their DVDs rarely went to second press.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was... That was hard. That was a hard hit. Fortunately, the one that I made with, let's see, Bryce and Sweeney and can't think of the fellow's name that would tie you up in a pretzel. But
there are quite a few of those in Jakara.
There are, but he was from another company. Went on to be very successful. He would wear the 2000 sunglasses.
Oh, Milano.
Mono collection.
Yes.
That's it. So he was on there, and it didn't come out too bad, because I didn't really fake it out. I had more of their real bodies faked out on the side, but it still was squished up and just broke my heart. And that's the type of thing that a person that doesn't work well with other people on artistic things,
mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing that can happen. I went off. I did a few others. I did a few others. Yeah, I can't think of them off the top of my head. I did some that stunk, and you know, I tried new things, but some of them were fun. And the most fun is the one that emulated for Anniversario Exclamation, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that's a Jakara one that everybody looks like they're the muscle figures, Ultimate Muscle, the muscle figures.
Ah, yes.
That. So that one I had a good time with.
That's good. Well, on that note, and I hate to do it, because like you said, you are steeped in the lore of Jakara, and I think for this episode we will have to end here, but I think there's no doubt we need to revisit you again. because, I mean, this honestly has been one of the most fascinating podcasts I've done here. I think what you've, like you said, the things that you've done for Chikara that people aren't necessarily aware of, that has helped to mold it to where it is today.
And the poison gas.
Yes, exactly.
Life. Just the other day, I was sitting around. I was eating one of those, potato chips, and I dropped one of them. And you know, geez, wow! I tell you,
exactly. Well, if there are individuals that do need to badger you on the internet, whether it be through hate or even to hear your opinions on other things, because as you mentioned, you are a seasoned podcaster, how might they go about doing that?
Oh, it's wigglesworld.com. Or you can also get there. It's Wigglies. Of course, you don't put apostrophes and types of punctuation on the internet, that new URL. But you can also look up Wiggly. And on the Google. And guess who's the first one? Me.
Nice.
Higgly Wiggly and Wiggles and all those other things. So I'm the number one in Google. That's the first I am ever been in anything.
All right. Are you on Twitter or the Facebook or any of those types of?
My portal. So it's also IamATurd.com.
All right. And, of course... Oh, sorry, go ahead. I interrupted.
Hey, PJs. I'm going to get in my PJs. You didn't ask me about punching Lou Albano in the stomach, but we'll get to that next time.
There's so many things to get to next time. I mean, you mentioned doing a TV show, and I believe the phrase meant what you said was your first TV show, which leads me to understand that you have done multiple, which astounds me, and I do need to hear about.
All right, man.
Yeah, and plus your whole... I assume, am I guessing it's your grandparents that got you into wrestling?
No.
Oh.
E.
Okay.
It was always on. My grandpap and my poppy would watch it. My poppy would go to Ag Hall with me, so yeah. Well, we can...
See, there's mines of stories to be mined, I suppose.
On.
What's that?
Just go on and on.
Exactly. So this, if you would be so kind to allow us to revisit, I definitely would like to.
Shall see.
We shall see. Well, the negotiations shall begin.
Oh, I'm in a video game. We got to talk about that.
Yeah. See, I mean, you do too much for one whole podcast. There are obviously, this is why you have multiple.
Okay, buddy. Thank you for having me. I'm truly honored. When Mike contacted me to be on, I was like, "Well, what the hell am I going to talk about?"
Well, you filled up a very busy podcast. So, thank you so much, sir. And Chikara fans, thank you for being here.